In the lobby, when I was waiting to come in here to the studio, you have a beautifully framed Bible verse out there with some painting or something that goes with it from Psalm 113:3, from the rising of the sun to the setting of the same, God is to be praised. That's what we're supposed to do everywhere, from rising the sun, setting of the sun, and somewhere between the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun is where everybody you know lives. You live there, I live there, your grandchildren, whose photo you showed me earlier, they all live between the rising of the sun, setting of the sun. And God's to be praised there. So we should be on the lookout in people for things that we can commend. We should commend the commendable, which is the character of Christ that we see in them. We should be affirming the things that are most affirmation worthy. This is a very popular verse in a lot of churches and a lot of individual lives. It's from Philippians 4:8. Whatever is praiseworthy, that's in the list of eight things. Whatever is praiseworthy, think on these things. And so we should be praising things that are praiseworthy. Or the writer of Proverbs said, "What is a good wife for? A good wife who fears God is to be praised. That's what she's for. You should look at that wife and go, God is good. God is in that praiseworthy wife. And so we don't waste our time. We don't waste our lives. We don't waste God's grace by finding where he's dispensed it, which is all over the place. And I argue in the book, he's put his image in believers and in unbelievers. Now, there's more voluntary, willing, enthusiastic cooperation with God in believers, of course, stands to reason. But even in unbelievers, the image of God is not totally eradicated there. And so it's possible to say in young children who don't yet believe or neighbors, you know, when you share your toy with your brother, that's a godly thing. That's a Christian thing. That's a good thing. Good for you for sharing your toy with your brother. Or some philanthropist who gives to help the community in some way to thank him for his generosity because it's a godlike thing. He doesn't even have to know that God's at work in him. He might even object to the idea that God is at work in him. But according to the scriptures, God is at work. And we should point that out to God's honor and to the benefit of the whole environment, of all the relationships that we're in. Plus, we have the satisfaction of being a person who's not a grouch, walks around barking about everything, but we actually point out good stuff.
Yeah. And is that language a key part of the affirmation to acknowledge a godlike characteristic? That I mean, we're saying those words.
Well, I don't want to make a new law. I don't want to make a new legalism out of the, you know, affirmations have to be formulaic, and if you don't follow the cookie recipe, then it doesn't count. That didn't count as affirmation. I mean, we should just be overflowing from our hearts with things that we appreciate because they are appreciation worthy. But I would say that it's more honoring to God if we attach God to the quality that we're seeing explicitly. So, for example, whether you and I give God glory for those skies that are out there today, he's still going to get glory. But he gets a particular kind of glory if we say, the heavens are declaring the glory of God. That's God who put those skies out there, that atmosphere that protects us from meteorites that are crashing into Russia and whatever else is in the news. And if we have God's grace manifest in the people that are all around us and we never comment on it, he doesn't get the kind of honor that he could get if we stop and say, that's God at work in you right there. I see it. That's a little microcosm of God's massive worldwide, universe-wide work right there. I saw it in you. There's a glimmer of God right there in you. And I just want to call it out and enjoy that for a moment.
Thank you. We're talking a little bit about grandchildren, how, and spouses, how important it is that our words be used to affirm and to build up, and what a difference that can make. I mean, have you been able to do that? I know that you write cards to your wife regularly, right? You're still doing that?
I forgot we must have mentioned that in a previous conversation.
It feels pressure every time I think about that. But anyway.
Well, what one guy does, not everybody else has to do. But yes, I've written a daily note to my wife for 30 some years, and she's got them all in boxes. It's a 3x5 card and on two sides. And I think words matter. Here's a principle. Maybe if a person who tuned into this program only got one thing, this might be one of the one things they want to get. Namely, people tend to be influenced by those who praise them. People tend to be influenced by those who praise them, which just exposes to me the irony that so many athletic coaches bark at their players rather than commend them for a good job. But John Calvin put it in one of his commentaries. I forget which letter. I think it was Philippians. He wrote in there, people tend to be shaped by those who speak well of them behind their backs. I think Richard Baxter, the Puritan writer, wrote something very similar. If you let me dig through my notes, I could probably find it verbatim. And it's just when you commend someone, use words to affirm something that they have done, they notice what you're noticing. Oh, you notice character qualities. Matters to you more than, and I don't mean to put these things down, but more than my earrings or more than my new tennis shoes or things that could be skin deep. If you commend the quality of Jesus, oh, the qualities of Jesus are something to be noticed. And so those things get highlighted. Those things are elevated in your relationship. Your relationship with the person you're commending is benefited because people would much rather be affirmed than criticized. And so there's lubrication. I think it was Senator Dirksen years ago who said the oil can is mightier than the sword. And he was talking about politics, that say good things wherever you can rather than taking jabs at people. Or jabs. Speaking of jabs, I mean, the Proverbs teach us that there are words that are like a sword thrust. A sword thrust takes only just a second. Just wham. And now a person is wounded, they're cut, they're bleeding, and it may take a long time to heal, and it may leave a scar. Words can be like that. Well, why do you want to use words like that when you could use words that are positive and affirming and build people up?
If we're not in the habit of it, I mean, most of us probably have to admit that we have to think about it. You know, maybe living in the upper Midwest, we get used to being cold and cranky.
Well, we alluded earlier to Philippians 4:8 that says, whatever is praiseworthy, think about things that are praiseworthy. So it does help. I mean, there are aspects to marriage and parenting that come more naturally to some people than others. But even people for whom marriage or parenting comes more naturally, it helps them to read a book about it once in a while or think about it once in a while or go to a marriage retreat once in a while or to be intentional about it. In fact, I will say this. In my 3 decades plus of pastoral ministry, I have yet to meet a failed marriage, that is a marriage that ended in divorce, that got there while they maintained a healthy diet of affirmation. In every single case, affirmation went away. And it not only was an evidence of a problem, it contributed to the problem. And so, yes, let us conscientiously, there's a chapter in the book for people who feel stuck, feel like they're not good at it. I want to do it. You've convinced me I should do it. What do I do? I don't know what to say or something. So I've listed 100 suggestions in there. And one man contacted me and said, what I did is I photocopied your 100 ideas and I cut them into strips. And I tape them all around the perimeter of my shaving mirror. And every day I look for one and say, I'm going to do that one today. So he's thinking proactively, consciously. He's strategizing. How can I make sure that this doesn't languish or just get dusty in my behavior repertoire? And so you can decide. This is good news for men. Men who can be kind of compartmentalized and project-oriented can make a project out of this. Say, I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to affirm, I'm going to plan it and I'm going to pick somebody and I'm going to look for something and now I'm going to get about it. And I can check it off as something that I've done today when I've done it. So yeah, I think thinking consciously helps.